This is a Capricorn FM podcast.
Good evening. Today we are going to talk about the structure of accounting paper 2. And we will also look into frequent asked questions. Accounting paper 2 will be out of 150 marks. And the duration for the paper is 2 hours. All questions are compulsory. You don't have to choose. You have to write all the questions. And each question covers a main topic that will be outlined shortly. And you will be given the pre-printed answer book wherein you need to answer all the questions. Please show all the calculations, show all the workings, and all the final answers must be done in the answer book. Now, when you write an examination, please check time. Please always work against time. Use the time allocated on each question to check or to judge whether you will be able to complete the questions in the available time. Time management is very important in every examination. Ensure that you complete the paper in the available time. Show all the calculations in brackets to earn marks. You may start with any question. Start with any question that is easier for you. And then at the end, you will try to answer those questions that are challenging to you. And you will be provided with the formula sheet. And this will allow you to focus on the application of the formula. Now, the topics for accounting paper 2 are as follows. You will have reconciliations. In reconciliations, that includes the preparation of bank reconciliation statement, the preparation of debtors reconciliation and creditors reconciliation, things like debtors age analysis, and also the ethical issues and internal control process on the reconciliation. The second topic for accounting paper 2 is the VAT. This, among others, includes the concept and ethical behavior in terms of the VAT. You will be required to prepare the VAT input, the VAT output, and the VAT control, the VAT control. And you will be required to calculate the amount receivable or amount payable to SARS. The next topic on accounting paper 2 is on inventory valuation. Under inventory valuation, you will be asked questions on the ethical conduct and internal control concerning the inventory. You will be required to do some calculations on the inventory valuation methods, such as the specific identification method, the FIFO method, and the weighted average method. And the next topic on accounting paper 2 would be manufacturing or cost accounting, wherein You need to prepare the production cost statement. You need to prepare the factory overhead. You need to prepare the abridged income statement. And there is also ethical conduct and internal control process. Concepts on ethics and internal control process, that is manufacturing. And you will also be assessed on budgeting and projected income statement, as well as analysis and interpretation of the cash budget. You will be required to prepare the debtors collection schedule. You will be required to prepare the creditors payment schedule. And then there is also analysis and interpretation of cash budget and projected income statement. You will also be assessed on financial indicators for internal control process. You will also be assessed on ethics and internal control and audit process. You need to familiarize yourself with the role played by professional bodies such as SAICA, which is SAICA stands for South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. Professional bodies such as SAIPA, South African Institute of Professional Accountants. You also need to familiarize with the King Code, the Third. You also need to familiarize yourself with the internal audit process. Like as I have indicated earlier on, that you will be required to prepare the factory overhead and the production cost statement. Let's say you are given an exercise to prepare the production cost statement. It is important for you to know the format of the production cost statement, which is the direct material plus the direct labor equals to the prime cost. And from there, you add the factory overhead cost. It will give you the total manufacturing cost. And from there, you subtract the work in process at the beginning. And then it will give you amount. And from there, you subtract the work in process at the end. Then it will give you total cost of production of finished goods. Now, let's say you are required to prepare the production cost statement, wherein you need to calculate the direct material cost. Let's say you are given the opening balance for the direct material. Let's say it's 1,575,000. From your production cost statement, you write direct material in brackets. You record the opening balance for the direct material, which is 1,575,000. And from there, you check additional information if there is errors and omission. Let's say there is a payment to Quick Deliveries for 75,000 for carriage on the raw material, and it was incorrectly allocated to the selling and distribution cost. There was a payment to Quick Deliveries for 75,000 for carriage of on raw material, and it was incorrectly allocated to selling and distribution cost. Now, that payment of 75,000 for carriage on raw material was incorrectly added to the selling and distribution, and as such, we are going to add it to the direct material cost, which means from the production cost statement, you will have direct material in brackets, the opening balance, which is 1,575,000, and then we add the carriage. The carriage for the raw material is 75,000, and the total the final figure will be 1,650,000. And from there, you check the direct material cost. Let's say the direct labor cost is not given, but we are given the prime cost. Obviously, if we are given the prime cost, it's going to be easier for us to get the direct material. We simply take the direct, the prime cost minus the direct material. Therefore, it will give you the direct labor cost. Now, according to this particular activity, let's say the prime cost is 2,550,000. And the direct material is 1,650,000. We don't know how much is the direct labor. So we are going to take the prime cost, which is 2,550,000. We subtract the direct material, which is 1,650,000, and then it will give you the direct labor cost, which is 900,000. So the answer to the direct labor cost is 900,000. Now you will have the direct material cost, which is 1,650,000 plus the direct labor cost, which is 900,000, and then it will give you the prime cost, which is 2,550,000. And from there you check the overhead, the factory overhead cost. Concerning the factory overhead cost, as I'm checking from the information on errors and omissions, says the entire insurance amount of 25,200 was transferred to the administration cost account, and 2/3 of the expense should be allocated to the factory. Now, 2/3 of the insurance amount is 25,200 and must be allocated to the factory using the 2/3. So we are going to say 25,200 multiplied by 2/3, then it will give you something like 16,800. So the overhead, the factory overhead cost included an amount of 117,600 for water and electricity. So the bookkeeper had incorrectly allocated this expense to the factory and administration and selling distribution in the ratio 6:3:1. The correct ratio is supposed to be 5:4:1. Now, the amount for 117,600 for water and electricity was incorrectly allocated to the factory expense using the incorrect ratio. Therefore, we are going to say 117,600 multiplied by 5 divided by 6, it will give you 98,000. So that 98,000, we are going to subtract that 117,600 for water and electricity. Therefore, it will give you minus 19,600. Therefore, the factory overhead cost from information is 518,800. Then we are going to take 518,800 plus the 16,800, which is the 2/3 of the insurance of 25,200, that is 16,800, and then we minus that 19,800. That was they've used the incorrect ratio. We subtract that figure because I said it is 19,800. Therefore, it will give you 516,000. So the total amount for your factory overhead will be 516,000. And from there, once you have the total factory overhead, remember, I've indicated earlier on that we have the direct material cost, which is 1,650,000, plus direct labor cost, which is 900,000, and then it will give you the prime cost of 2,550,000, and from there you add factory overhead. The factory overhead is 516,000, and then it will give you the total manufacturing cost, which is 306,000, 3,066,000. And from there, you go on to check if there is work in process at the beginning. So the work in process at the beginning is given, let's say it's 230,000, and then it will give you 3,296,000. 3,066,000, which is the total manufacturing cost, plus the work in process at the beginning, which is 230,000, it will give you 3,296,000. And from there, we less work in process, and then it will give you the total cost of production. But in case where the work in process is not given, what's going to happen? As I'm checking from the information, says 7,600 shares were produced. It 7,600 shares were produced at unit cost of 420 each. If you can see 7,600 multiplied by 420, it will give you 3,192,000. That would be your total cost of production of finished goods. But if the work in process is not given, therefore you're going to take the total cost of production of finished goods, and then you subtract the total work in process during the year. Remember, we had the work in process at the beginning, and then the total manufacturing cost plus the work in process at the beginning, it will give you that particular amount, which happened to be 3,296,000. Therefore, we take the total cost of production of finished goods, which is 3,192,000 minus 3,296,000, it will give you a difference of 104,000. That is your work in process. That is your work in process at the end. The production cost statement is done. You will also be required to calculate the break-even point. It is important to know how to calculate the break-even point. Remember, when you calculate the break-even point, you are going to be to say the fixed cost over the contribution. The contribution is the difference between the selling price and the variable cost. So the formula used to calculate the break-even point is going to be the fixed cost over the selling price minus the variable cost. So you need to check as to how much units we need to produce before we should actually make a profit. For us to make a profit, we should produce above the break-even point. We should produce more than the break-even point. So that one is done. You will also be required to prepare the creditors' reconciliation. Concerning creditors' reconciliation, we normally prepare the creditors' reconciliation to bring into agreement the creditors' control account with the statement received from our creditors, which are our suppliers. Now, it is the creditors' reconciliation, it is a summary of the individual transactions that happens on a daily basis, and therefore should agree with the statement that we as the business received at the end of the month from our creditors. Now, this can also be considered as an internal control measures, as it will be used to prevent fraud or miscalculations and items that might be omitted either by us or as the business or our suppliers. And therefore, at the end of every month, our creditors' control account should correspond with the balance that will be shown in the statement received from our suppliers. That is the creditors' reconciliation. You're going to be you are going to be required to prepare the creditors' reconciliation, and I think you need to be careful when you prepare the creditors' reconciliation. I think we should take a short break and we will come back shortly. Welcome back. Remember, we are busy with the frequent asked questions. We now move on to the debtor's age analysis. You will be expected to answer questions on debtor's age analysis. Remember, a business analyzes the age of every debtor's account every month. So we need to work out as to how long or the age the debtor has owed the business. In most cases, you find that the amount owed is within 30 days or 60 days. So a debtor's age analysis is drawn up in order to give details of which debtor owe amounts and for how long this amount has been outstanding. Now, when we sell goods on credit to a debtor, the business will provide credit terms. For example, debtors will need to pay within 30 days. So the credit terms, we look into the credit policy, the credit limit, the screening of debtors, charge interest on overdue account, offer discount to debtors who pays accounts on time. Now, the business will need to follow up on debtors who do not adhere to the credit terms. How part? By sending regular statements, or by making telephone calls, or sending SMSs, emails, and so on. Remember, there are two ways of controlling the amount owing by debtors to keep bad debts to a minimum. Number one, when a debtor opens an account, he or she is given a credit limit. So the credit limit is the amount of credit a debtor is allowed to buy before paying for everything. For example, if the credit limit is 5,000, if the debtor is already owes 4,500, she will not be allowed to buy more than 500 until she has bought or brought the balance of the account down to below 4,500. So the debtor will also be given terms, a time limit in which she must pay. So the business should give debtors at least 30 days to pay. And if they do not pay within 30 days, no further credit should be allowed. So a statement is sent to every debtor at the end of every month to show the total amount owing, which can be prepared to the credit limit. So, of course, there are challenges on debtor's age analysis. It means it is a means of internal control to ensure that debtors pays within the time stipulated or the terms agreed on when opening an account. So the longer the debtor takes to pay, the less likely to do so, and this means the business will incur bad debts, which decreases the profits. If the debtor do not pay promptly or on time, the business may have cash flow problems because the business will use the cash received to pay for its creditors. Now, how to encourage debtors to pay their accounts? You can encourage debtors to pay their accounts by giving them a discount for the prompt payment. If debtors are paying within 30 days, they might be given a trade discount to encourage them to pay on time. Or you can charge them interest if they don't pay within the required time. And then, what must be done if debtors don't pay their accounts on time? Contact debtors to find out if there is a problem.
or if there's errors on account. If debtors do not pay their accounts, please make a follow-up. Check if there's any problems. Check if there's any errors on account. Number two, you can make an arrangement for, you can make arrangements for them to pay off over a few months. Or if the problem still persists, therefore you can take legal action for those who fail to pay their accounts to recover the costs. One of the questions that are expected in the examination is that you may be required to explain why debtor's age analysis is considered to be an effective internal control measures, and you need to state some points. Now, the debtor's age analysis helps us to identify the slow or defaulting debtors, debtors who do not abide by the credit terms, so that action can be taken. It also helps to highlight debtors in good standing so that their credit limit or credit ratings can be reviewed. It can also expose the problem of allowing debtors who exceeded their credit limits. It can also assist in the planning where a corrective measure such as sending reminders, writing off the debtors can be done. So those are the few reasons that need to be considered to be an effective internal control measures on debtors' age analysis. And the other problem, you may be required to explain that problems highlighted by the debtors' age analysis. You will be given the debtors' age analysis, and then you need to analyze and check the problems based on the debtors' age analysis. Let's say, for instance, I'm having a debtors' age analysis here. I'm just going to highlight the problems. As I'm checking from the debtors' age analysis, I have a debtor here called B. Buotha. As I'm checking this debtor's age analysis, the credit limit is 3,500. But the amount owing, let's say, is 4,200. The current month is 3.8. In 30 days is 400. Now, the problem that I can detect from this data is that he was given a credit limit of 3,500, but the business allowed him to buy up to 4,200. That is the first problem. So this data exceeded the credit limit by, you need to calculate the difference. The credit limit is 3,500 and he's owing 4,200. So 4,200 minus 3,500, it's something like 700. So a debtor exceeded the credit limit by 700. That is the first problem. And as I'm checking again, it's like there's a debtor whose account is overdue. Let me check this one. There's a guy here or a debtor here by the name of S. Walker. As I'm checking, after 60 days, this guy is still owing, after 90 days, this guy is still owing 4,000. So, which means his account, the account of S. Walker is overdue. Because as I'm checking, the credit limit is 13,000, amount owing it's 12,500, and then the current month is 1,000, and then in 30 days there's 3,000, in 60 days it's 4,500, in 90 days is 4,000. And that would basically means that this guy, his account, the account of S. Orca, it's overdue by 8,500. That is the second problem that I can detect from the debtor's age analysis. And as I'm checking again, there's another debtor here by the name of Clay. As I'm checking from the debtor's age analysis, it's like the credit limit is 3,000 and amount owing is 3,000 and the current month is 1,900. And then after 30 days is nothing. And then after 60 days is 1,100. So, which means the account of Clean is overdue by 1,100, because even after 60 days, this guy is still owing 1,100. So his account is overdue by 1,100. Those are the few problems. And the other problem, let me check the other one. There's another guy here called M. Veli. Let me check the Veli. The Veli here, from the debtor's age analysis, the credit limit is 3,500. No, the credit limit for Veli is 7,000. Amount owing is 1,450. And then the current month is 500. And then after 90 days, Veli is owing 950. So, which means the account of M. Veli is overdue by 950, because after 90 days, he is still owing 950 rand. Okay, that is done. And then let me quickly check to the other problems highlighted by the debtor's age analysis. As I'm checking from the debtor's age analysis, there is a poor control on the granting of credit. Because the business is continuing to sell goods on credit to those debtors whose accounts are overdue. As I'm checking from the debtor's age analysis, the account of M. Veli is overdue by 950. The account of S. Walker is overdue by 8,500. And the account of Oatlin is overdue by 1,100. That would mean there's a poor control of the on granting of credit. Okay, I think that is done concerning the debtor's age analysis. And then we need to move on to other expected questions. You are expected to answer questions on the VAT. Remember, the standard rate of the VAT is 15%. So you will be required to prepare the VAT input, the VAT output, and the VAT control. Let me start with the VAT input. VAT input is the VAT that we as the business pay when we buy goods, either on credit or on cash from the suppliers. The VAT input is the VAT that the business actually pays when they buy goods on credit or by means of a cash from other suppliers. And the VAT output is the VAT that we as the business charge on goods that we sell to our customers. So at the end, there is certain amount of money that can either be paid to SARS or claim from SARS. So the business is an agent of SARS. SARS here refers to South African Revenue Service, and therefore should not try by any way to manipulate its profit so as to pay or be charged a small amount of money by SARS. So the business should also try by all means to evade from tax as it collects money on behalf of SARS, and therefore should there be any misconception, it will have to account or have its trading license taken, because it is a fraudulent behavior to collect VAT from customers and not pay it to SARS. So you will be required to calculate the VAT amount payable to SARS or receivable from SARS. Now, this can be done through the VAT output and the VAT input. Now, if it appears that the VAT output is greater than the VAT input, take into account the balance from the last month, it can be either receivable because we have paid a lot of money to SARS, or it may be payable because we have paid less money than expected. Then this will imply that this will imply to us that it is a VAT payable to SARS. If it appears to us that the VAT input is greater than the VAT output, this will mean that the money will have to be claimed back from SARS. So that is the VAT input, the VAT output, then the VAT control. You will also be expected to answer questions on the cash budget. But before we can talk about cash budget, let's quickly move on to the inventory. Let's start with inventory and we'll finish with the cash budget. Concerning inventory, you will be expected to calculate the value of the closing stock using the weighted average method. When you calculate the closing stock using the weighted average method, it's important to know the formula. The formula used to calculate the weighted average method is going to be total cost of units available to be sold divided by the total number of units to be sold. Obviously, you're going to take the opening stock, you add the purchases, you subtract any returns, you subtract any donations, it will give you the total cost of the units available to be sold. Or you can say opening units, you can count calculated by using the units. Open units plus units purchased minus units returned minus units donated. It will minus units stolen if there are certain units that are stolen, and then from there it will give you the weighted price. Therefore you multiply it by the number of units at the end, and then it will give you the value of the closing stock. And moving on to the next question, maybe calculate the value of the closing stock using the FIFO. The most recent stock is the stock purchased last, the last stock to be purchased. So you take that stock, you add the number of units purchased during the year, you less the number of units returned, and then you multiply it by the price. Then it will give you the value of the closing stock. And then if they can say calculate the closing stock using specific identification method, you just take the units purchased, you minus the units returned, you minus the units stolen, you minus the units sold, and then it will give you the units unsold. Therefore, you divide it by the number of units left, multiply the cost price for that item. And then lastly, if they can say how to calculate the cost of sales using the specific identification method, This one is very simple. You just take the units sold, you multiply by the cost price, and it will give you the cost of sales. How to calculate the cost of sales using the specific identification method? You just take the number of units sold, you multiply it by the cost price of the units, and it will definitely give you the cost of the sales. There you have it. I think we are done with the inventory. And let's quickly take a short break and we will come back shortly. You are welcome. And then we are still busy with frequent asked questions. You are expected to answer questions on the cash budget. One of the questions may be, may say, what is the purpose of preparing the cash budget? We prepare the cash budget in order to anticipate the future receipts and payments. That is one of the reasons. Or to anticipate future movements of cash, or to monitor and control over receipts and payments, or to identify future bank balance. Those are the few purpose of preparing the cash budget. And then without any waste of time, let's quickly move on to the preparation of the cash budget. You will be required to prepare the cash budget. And when you prepare the cash budget, you need to start by preparing what we call debtors collection schedule. Remember, your cash budget is divided into the two sections, which is the cash receipts section and the cash payments section. Under the cash receipts, that's when you will record cash sales. You will be given the cash sale for the budget period. If you are preparing the cash budget for 2 months, which is April and May, you will be given the cash sales for these 2 months. Now, from there, you need to calculate what we call cash from debtors. The only way to calculate cash from debtors is by way of preparing what we call debtors collection schedule for these 2 months, which is April and May. Now, let's say how to prepare the debtors collection schedule. Remember, when goods are sold on credit, the profit is accounted for immediately, but the cash comes in later. And how much later will depend on the policy of the firm. For instance, the business may allow debtors to pay in 30 days or 60 days. So it is always advisable for the debtors to pay within 30 days, as this money will be used to pay for the creditors. Remember, not all the debtors pay on time, but the business will, from the past experience, know what percentage they actually pay each month. I'm going to take you through a short activity. And it says credit sales are to be collected as follows. 20% in the month of the sales, 5% discount is allowed for prompt payment. And 60% after 30 days, which is the first month after the sales. And 18% after 60 days, which is the second month after the sales. And 2% is to be written off after 90 days, which is after the third month of sales. Now, we are going to use this information to prepare the debtors collection schedule. So we are given the credit sales for February, it is 29,500. The credit sales for March is 32,500. The credit sales for April is 28,500. And the credit sales for May is 34,500. Now, from there, remember, for goods sold on credit in February for 29,000, we are going to receive 18%. Because they are saying in February, we're going to receive 20%, which is outside our budget period. In March, we are going to receive 60%, which is outside our budget period. But in April, we are going to receive 18%. So in April, we're going to receive 18% of the stock sold on credit in February. So we're going to calculate the 18% of 29,500. So 29,500 multiplied by 18/100, then it will give you 5,330. So you record 5,330 under April. And for the goods sold on credit in March for 32,000, we are going to receive 60% in April, which is 19,500 in April, and 18% in May, which is 5,850. What I'm saying here is we're going to take the credit sales for April, which is 32,500, we multiply by 60/100, it will give you 19,500. And for the stock sold on credit in May, is 32,000. It's going to be, we are going to recollect or receive 18%. So 32,500 multiplied by 18/100, it will give you 5,850. And for the goods sold on credit in April, which is 28,500, we are going to receive 20% in April plus 5% discount. So it's going to be like 28,500 multiplied by 20/100. And then it will give you something like 5,700 multiplied by 95/100. Out of 100%, we've been given 5% trade discount. So we were left with 95. So that is why we multiply it by 95/100. And it will give you 5,415. And in May, it will be 28,500 multiplied by 60/100. Which is 17,500. And the for goods sold on credit in May for 34,500, we are going to receive 20% and 5% discount. So the calculation is as follows. It's going to be 34,500 multiplied by 20/100 multiplied by 95/100 because we have been given a 5% discount, and it will give you something like 6,555. So from there, that means we are done with the credit debtors collection schedule. For April, we had 5,310, and then March 19,500, April 5,415, and the total cash from debtors is for April is 30,225. Moving on to May, for March it was 5,840, which was received in May. And then for the stock sold on credit in April, we have received 17,100 in May. And for the stock sold on credit in May, we have received 6,555. Which give us a total cash from debtors for May, which is 29,505. So we transfer these final figures to the cash budget. Remember, from the cash budget, we're going to have the cash sales. The cash sales, as I'm checking, it's given, which is 27,500 in April, and 36,000 in May. That is the cash sales. And from there, we are going to transfer cash from debtors from the debtors collection schedule. And then for April, the total cash collection from debtors is 30,225. And the total collection for May is 29,505. And once that is done, therefore, you're going to check if there is any other income. So remember, from the cash, when we prepare the cash budget, we check from the cash receipts. It's the same as when we prepare the cash receipt journal. We check all the money received by the business. Now, as I'm checking, it's like we had a fixed deposit, a fixed deposit of 45,000 with interest of 4,000 is due to mature on the 1st of May. So we are going to receive 45,000 in May plus the 4,000 interest on fixed deposit. So moving on to the recordings, you record a fixed deposit, and in May it's going to be the fixed deposit, which is 45,000, and the interest on fixed deposit is going to be something like 4,000, because the fixed deposit has matured, and when the fixed deposit matured, the money is now coming into the business, and then as such it's going to be regarded as a receipt. So moving on to the calculation of the total receipts, it's going to be for April, it's going to be, remember, we had a cash from debtors, the cash sales, which is 27,500, and we add the cash from debtors, which is 30,225, and then the total receipts for April is 57,725. And moving on to May, the cash sales for May is 36,000, and cash from debtors for May is 29,505. And the fixed deposit which matured is 45,000, and the interest on fixed deposit is 4,000. So the total receipts for May is going to be 114,504. Now we move on to the payments. We're going to check cash purchases. The cash purchases for April and May is given, which is 12,400 and 14,700 respectively. So we are given the cash purchases for April is 12,400 and for May is 14,700. Now we move on to payment to creditors. Information says creditors are paid 1 month after the purchases. For good purchase on credit in March for 15,450 will be paid in April. And for goods purchased on credit in April for 14,800 will be paid in May, because we have been told that creditors are paid 1 month after the purchases. Now moving on to the operating expenses. Let's quickly check the operating expenses. Information says operating expenses are paid in cash 1 month after the expense in occurred. And it is expected that the operating expense would increase by 5% per month over the budget period. Now, the operating expense for March is 7,600 and will be paid in April. And in May, it will be increased by 5%. So the 5% of 7,600 is going to be added together is going to be 7,980, which means 76,000 multiplied by 105. Because if they're saying it is going to be increased by 5%, we are going to take 7,600 and then from 100% we add 5%, which means it's going to be 105/100. And then it will give you the final figure, which is 7,980. But if you use the loan dry, you can either say 7,600 multiplied by 5/100, and then it will give you an increment, and then you add it to 7,600. You will arrive at the same answer. I don't want to say much, and then I think we coming to the end of my presentation, and please prepare yourself thoroughly. Make sure that you use past exam question papers in preparation for your final examination. And accounting is simple. You just take the money, the amounts from the question paper and paste them on the answer sheet. And that's where you get the marks. But what is important, you need to be accurate when you interpret and when you do your calculations. And that's all I had for you. And good luck, everybody. And may God bless you. Thank you very much.
That was a Capricorn FM podcast. For more podcasts, visit capricornfm.co.za.